Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
This time on Gamers Week podcast. Lastly, it was inspired by what exclusively Japanese portable console that was developed for use on airline flights?
I think I've heard of this before, and I think the name has something to do with flying in it, but I can't remember what it is.
The Sega Mile High Club?
That's a different handheld. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Host. does Donnie not want to host?
It's so nice. It feels like I'm constantly hosting. And I feel like I hosted like maybe last week or 2 weeks ago.
You did, because 2 weeks ago, and I hosted last week, and then because Ryan keeps being gone on his weeks, it kind of messes everything up.
This is the first time I've been on a podcast in probably close to 8 years, because I used to do like a Shadowrun one with a friend of mine back in the day. But in 8 years that I haven't been a host or had to worry about much other than just being a guest, it's a kind of nice feeling.
Yeah.
There
you
go.
Work at all.
Yeah. Just show up and be charming and you're good to go.
There you go.
All right. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 67, and today is Wednesday, April 5th, 2023. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I'll be your host this evening. Ryan is actually out. He is still suffering from a full body waxing accident, so he will not be with us this evening.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Please, we need all the details.
There was oil, there was a fire, there was like paste, and I think he'll probably be better off telling you about it next week when he comes back. However, as you can hear, my other gracious co-host is here. She recently rewrote the rules when it comes to losing competitions to where she always wins. Say hello to Writer's View, a.k.a. Blue Williams.
I'm not going to add to the discussion. We beat it to death already in the uncut episode. Hello, everyone.
We also have a guest with us this evening.
Ghostly guest.
He is the host of the Leadist podcast. He is a gamer, a musician, a souls nut, a lost finale apologist, a dungeon master, and an avid chair sitter. We have with us Kenny Thomas of the Leadist podcast. Kenny, how are you doing this evening?
I am great. I'm so happy to finally be here. I'm a gamer, and it's finally my week, and I have survived my full body wax, and I've made it.
Oh, that's good.
What a relief to hear.
So, Kenny, would you like to go ahead and tell everybody about the podcast?
Yeah, I'm on the Leadist podcast. It's a show I came up with about 2 years ago with friends of mine, Tim and Ryan. Tim, who has been with you guys on Gamers Week. And I just wanted to make a show where we play games all about video games, which is trivia and game show style stuff. And that's what we do every week. And you probably hear ads of ours and fun things if you listen to Gamers Week, because we've been friends with you guys for a while. And I'm happy to finally be on the show to hang out with you.
Now, you guys just released your latest episode, correct? Episode 92?
Yeah, we for a while I've wanted to have Grouchy from Backlog Busters, and we finally got him to come on. He's over in Vegas and does this backlog bingo, which a bunch of our listeners kind of are involved with on Twitter, where he makes this bingo card, and people go through a backlog of games they already own and haven't played, and he has winners and prizes for people who finish the bingo card by playing all these old games in their library. So finally got to chat with him about that. So he's on the latest episode, Grouchy, for sure.
No kidding. Cool. That sounds interesting.
And we will, of course, have links for The Leadist and for Kenny in the show notes. So after you're done listening here, be sure to head on over and check out those guys.
I could have said that, Blue.
Well, I said it.
So this past weekend, Blue and I attended the Midwest Gaming Classic. We had an absolute blast, and we give a full recap of our experience in our uncut patron-only bonus cast. So if you'd like to hear all about it, consider becoming a patron of the show. Here's just a taste of how the party went. Unofficial Nintendo World Championships, which if you are not familiar with it, it consists of three games. Super Mario Brothers, where you have to get 50 coins. So the fastest to get 50 coins. You have to complete one race in Rad Racer and then get 50 lines in Tetris.
Do 50 lines?
Well, complete 50 lines, not do 50. Like, oh my God, I don't know what I can do. I don't know what I can do with this.
Come on, three more. Dig deep.
You got to reach in the bowels. And now it's time to take a look at our reviews, reactions, and requests. Inner Demons GR says, Carrie Ann Hoskins was a great guest with wild stories. From dislocated knees to bar brawls to her and her fellow cast politely fending off being robbed. She sounds like a real-life badass, especially in caring for her sons and her recent ASD diagnosis. Yes, Carrie Ann Hoskins was a great person to interview, very fun, and the stories that she was going to, or the stories that she did tell, could have kept us entertained for hours.
Absolutely. I would love to sit and pick her brain a little bit more.
Bootleg Anime Kiosk says, these stories are insane. I just said that. I could listen to Carrie Ann Hoskins tell them for hours. I literally just said that.
Well, apparently it's a popular opinion after listening to last week's episode.
The DJP VMA says, cool stories from Carrie. Thanks for sharing. The Yoshi gulps during the cuss words is ridiculously cute.
Glad you like it.
I will also chime in as a listener who listened to that entire thing, and I could have used another hour of it myself. It was very interesting.
Nice.
What was your favorite part of it?
I mean, I like hearing Mortal Kombat stuff just because I'm a Mortal Kombat nerd, you know, just all the kind of her inception into getting into Sonya. And I don't know, I find that cool how you can fall into something like that, especially, you know, not knowing anything about it before then and it becoming such a huge thing in your career. It's just really cool to hear about.
And she was just sent over like, all right, you're going to do this. Okay. Now you're the face, like pretty much the face of the franchise.
Just another day's work.
Yep.
And now it's time for the
Columbia. I think we got some star data, and if you got the angle, we'll go into an item 16.
We have the data, and you're go for the line.
Very important poll.
I heard bits and pieces of it. Was that like a command center for the NASA launch or something?
Yes, that was a brief trip to space that I recently made and decided to go spacewalk and record an intro for the very important poll. That's the kind of dedication I have to this show.
How much did that cost you for that trip?
Oh, Elon footed the bill. No big deal. He's been pestering me to go to space for a while.
You have pulled otherworldly beings this time.
Yes. We wanted the poll to go out to everyone in the solar system. So, success. All right. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP. That is our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So this week's question, what is your favorite Disney video game of all time? In third place, we have Aladdin with 22% of the votes. Second place was Kingdom Hearts 2 with 24.7% of the votes. And the winner was DuckTales with 39.3% of the vote. We also had 12.5% of people vote other. So let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At Arcade Main says, bit of a dark horse pick, but Toy Story 3. The toy box mode is genuinely amazing. You could spend dozens of hours with it, and it was the inspiration for Disney Infinity. At Buttlord Primus says, I was a big fan of Maui Mallard in Cold Shadow. I thought it was so cool growing up playing a Ninja Donald Duck. Second place goes to Darkwing Duck. Maybe I just like duck games. At Haywire Hornet 91 said, Split Second, a fantastic racer that was made by Disney Interactive, but has basically nothing to do with Disney. A gorgeous looking game where you race, but things happen that change the game drastically. Like, for example, an airliner crashing into the course. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, that's dark. For Disney.
At Dothstorm says, The Little Mermaid for the NES was a banger of a game. I actually like that one, so I'll agree. And at Retro Rex says, Aladdin for the SNES. Some men just want to watch the world burn. I'll agree with you, Retro Rex. I prefer the SNES Aladdin over the Genesis. Hot take.
So Genesis was a scimitar, right? And SNES was it a stick of bread or something? Or what was it? I can't remember. Because they removed, in the SNES version, it was not a scimitar. I think they didn't want as much violence, so there was no sharp blades.
Wow. I don't think he's got any weapon in the SNES one, but now I guess I don't remember.
You could be right. Maybe he just throws stuff. That
I think he just
right.
throws stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Throws stuff and jumps.
Well, which is kind of funny because on the box art, he's still carrying the scimitar.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, but you know how accurate box art usually is.
You're not wrong.
So, Kenny, how did you vote in the poll?
Oh, I immediately was kind of with the rest of the crowd and voted DuckTales just because. And you know what's funny? After I saw this poll and voted in it, maybe I'm late to the party here, but 10 years ago, apparently, there was a DuckTales remaster and it's on Steam. And by today's standards, you would even call it a remake. I mean, the whole thing was redone with voice acting and additional content. And I didn't know that until yesterday. And I just played it last night and it holds up totally.
That's the one that was on PS3?
Yes, correct. I believe so. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I have that one. It was good, but I was so annoyed by how often they interrupted the gameplay to do the voice acting cutscenes.
That is true. I was playing last night and thinking the same thing, and that's why I am a skip button man, and I utilize that a lot.
Skip button man.
Yep.
So what about you, Donnie? How did you vote?
I pretty much went with everybody else. It was DuckTales for me by a landslide. However, I will say that I am a big fan of Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers, not just the first one, but also the second one. I have played that one. I've played them both. I beat them both, along with DuckTales. But there's just something very... very comforting, very familiar about DuckTales and Rescue Rangers. And I've tried the others. I've tried Tailspin, which is okay. I've tried another game called Cash Out, but we won't talk about that one.
Are you sure? I think we could talk about it a little bit.
I think we've talked about that game ad nauseum, right?
Disagree.
You know, Aladdin is fun. Maui Mallard, I actually have that game. And that's another one where it's like I got to a certain point in the first level, and I'm just like, I got kind of stuck. So is that like a certain theme with some of the Disney games where I know some of the older ones like DuckTales and Rescue Rangers, they didn't have that. It was pretty much cut and dry.
Maybe you just struggle with Donald Duck games.
You would think with having the same name as the title character, I would have it easy, but I guess not.
I guess not. Donald.
Oh, don't. Blue, what about you? What was your choice this week?
Well, the good news is there's not a bad choice in this poll. Aladdin, Kingdom Hearts 2, DuckTales, those are all fantastic games. But I had to represent for Lion King on Super Nintendo. That Ooh. I loved that game when I was a kid. Aladdin is very good, but I found Lion King to be way more challenging. I know it has this reputation for being like impossibly difficult, which I don't think mm-hmm. it deserves, but I really enjoyed how challenging it was as a kid. I was so determined to get past it. I ran into a big roadblock when it came to the waterfall and the Hakuna Matata level, and that took me weeks to get through, but I did it, and it was such a big accomplishment. So I really, really like Lion King.
Do you think that some of the older games, like, yes, they were difficult for us when we were kids, but now that we're older, we're more experienced gamers, these games are a little bit easier to go back and play?
Usually. One of the things that I noticed when I went back to replay Aladdin and Lion King recently is how many blind jumps there are in the games.
Oh, yes.
Yes. One of those mechanics where it's like, how do we extend the gameplay? Oh, we'll just put a few gotcha moments in there. So it's one of those old game things that you kind of didn't notice back then because all games did it. And now mm-hmm. you're like, wait a second, that's not fair.
Life isn't fair.
Yeah.
I don't remember if DuckTales had difficulty options back on NES or not, but they did in this remake, and I went straight to hard, and it's still pretty hard. As far as I remember, bouncing on that pogo stick and dodging things, you know, on the ceiling, getting hit by spikes and on the ground, and yeah, it's a whole thing. But I don't know. Do you guys remember if there was a difficulty in the NES game?
There was not.
I don't think so. I kind of don't feel like many NES games had difficulties.
Hold on. Let me see. DuckTales, NES.
I feel like that was like a Super Nintendo thing and forward.
No, there was. There was easy, normal, and difficult. Holy crap. I was
all
wrong.
All right. Never mind. I guess we'll all shut up now.
All right. Let's take a look at our patron shoutouts. We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Ducks with thick thighs, ducks in a pie, ducks in the skies, ducks in black ties, ducks with star eyes, ducks in surprise, Wizard of Zardoz, Bops and Dugnut, Retro Blast Pat, Orgasmo 3000, Great Cyaman 81, BNT Zilligai, Geek with That, Johnny Boombots, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Ducks in Disguise, Jim and Colleen, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, the Red Ox PDX family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Cutesnakes, number one Blue Sick Voice fan, Random Retro Dude, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gametroid, Emo Esque, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, and Fruitcakes, number one Stan. And still, no Donnie G Retro fan.
We've been over this. They're all Donnie G Retro fans.
They're all my people. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, let's move on to our headline segment, which is, of course, proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic, family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they want to know what you think is the best Tetris port. Send your answers to email at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. And you know, I don't think I've played Tetris many other places besides NES and Game Boy.
Ditto. Yeah, I've heard so many things about Tetris Effect, and I still never done it, but I'd like to try it in VR because it looks super cool.
That is one thing I would really love to check out, the VR Tetris. But I'm with you, Blue. I've pretty much played both Nintendo carts of Tetris. A lot of people go for the Tengen version, which I think it could be a little bit more challenging because of how they start you off. They fill up some of the well with certain pieces that you have to try and maneuver around. I still love the OG Tetris, but Game Boy Tetris also has a special place.
Mm-hmm. From Bloomberg, Sony PSVR 2 headset off to a slow start as Metaverse push sputters. Sony Group Corp. is projected to sell fewer than 300,000 PlayStation VR 2 headsets in its first weeks on the market, a slow start for company efforts to take a leading role in the development of the metaverse. Sony had a lofty goal of making about 2 million units for the PSVR 2's launch window, Bloomberg News reported last year. The headset is a foundational piece of Sony's strategy to build a metaverse where people can do far more than play video games, but the conceptual 3D visual environments that prompted Mark Zuckerberg to rename his company Meta Platforms Inc. have yet to repay the industry's heavy investments in hardware and software. Sony President and Chief Executive Officer Kenichiro Yoshida made the metaverse a growth tentpole for Sony, much like Meta has done, and the company's in-house game studios have been developing VR-tailored games to help the new headset get off to a fast start that hasn't materialized. Chief Financial Officer Hiroki Totoki said at a recent Morgan Stanley conference that Sony is reasonably confident about surpassing the roughly 5 million sales of the original PlayStation VR goggles over the course of the PSVR 2's lifetime on the market. Matching the prior device's performance would not make the current one a success. However, given Meta's more accessible and affordable Quest has surpassed 20 million sales to date, according to a report this month. The cool consumer reception of the PSVR 2 is indicative of the wider challenge for metaverse purveyors, including Meta. Hype around metaverse offerings has petered out over the past year as tech firms have cut spending on projects that aren't immediately profitable, and support from the crypto sector has vanished as that industry reels from successive crises.
It's petered out.
Whoa, boy. What did I say?
No. You said it right.
He's making a Peter Griffin joke. That's kind of his thing.
Oh, gotcha.
So 5 million in sales of the original PlayStation VR. I looked up because I was curious. You could say that the PlayStation 3 is Sony's least successful traditional console, right?
Really?
Well, yeah.
If I were a betting man, I would say so, but I'm not sure.
That blows my mind.
Why? Everybody hated the PlayStation 3. Like, everybody.
I didn't.
I mean, I didn't either. It's still my pinned tweet on Twitter, but...
Oh, okay.
So anyway, for comparison, PlayStation 3 sold 87 million units, over 87 million units, and the PSVR 1 managed 5 million. That's a big difference between people who are interested in gaming but don't want to go to VR.
Is it because the fact that you actually have to go and buy a system and then buy a separate standalone VR unit for it to go along with it, as opposed to the Oculus Quest or the Meta Quest where it stands alone? The only thing you needed was a Facebook account?
I think that absolutely has to do with it, because, I mean, if I were thinking about VR breaking into the mainstream at all, it's kind of anecdotal, but every friend that I have, lots of friends that are not big gamers that have MetaQuests, and it's because of the price point, and it's because it's a standalone unit. And when, you know, especially when a PSVR 2 comes out that almost double the price, and you have to have, you know, the investment to play VR, you need a whole system to go with it. It just seems like they need like a killer app that is not there yet.
Yeah. And okay, so I looked it up. PlayStation 1 sold 102 million units. PlayStation 2 sold 158 million units. PlayStation 4 sold 117 million units. So yes, PlayStation 3 was the least successful PlayStation.
Damn.
Sorry.
I think it took about halfway through PS3's life cycle for it to kind of start popping off a bit, because at the beginning it was super expensive, and the Xbox 360, everyone was just all about it.
But kind of steering that back to PSVR 2, if what hampered the PS3 was cost and lack of games, that's probably the same thing that's hampering PSVR, the first one and the second one. Because as we said, you have to buy the console, then you have to buy the VR thing. And what killer games on there that you absolutely have to have? The only one that I could name off the top of my head right now would be Horizon Call of the Mountain. Other than that, I really don't know of any like absolutely killer gotta have games. And this mentions the difficulties with getting people to accept metaverse stuff. Would it be better off for Sony to just forget about metaverse nonsense and actually focus on what it is that they do, which is games?
Sounds like a viable option. But again, If you want the metaverse to be where people actually go and spend a hell of a lot of time in VR, if you want to be that dominant space, kind of like Ready Player One, the Oasis or whatever, then I think they're still going to try and develop this. And yes, they're going to develop the games as well, but I don't know how you actually juggle that that relationship there.
Yeah, I was wondering if the Horizon game was going to be that kind of killer app or something even that might even drive me to want to get it. But from the reception that came out about it, it sounds like it's not much more, you know, they need something like a Half-Life Alyx, you know what I mean? Or even getting Half-Life Alyx on the system would be a start, even amongst the other library they have. But they need one or two. Two would be better, or at least one really, really killer game.
Right. I see a bunch of games that they have on the list. It's either on the horizon or out now. So it's not like it doesn't have options for people.
Yeah, there's definitely options. I just mean like the system seller. I mean, speaking for myself, I have a MetaQuest. I'm a big gamer, though, so I do buy a lot of gaming stuff. And I would go buy a PSVR 2 if there's games that I had to play. And I don't feel like most of these I have to play. And a lot of that library that you're looking at are available on Quest already as well, too.
Mm. Right. That's the problem right there. So you want us to go and spend X amount of dollars, hundreds of dollars, I think, on the PSVR 2. You have to buy the PS5, the PSVR 2 with the MetaQuest. That's all you need. You connect up wirelessly. You have a store that you download games through that. And there you go.
Like, if you have the right kind of game, people will do what it takes to get it. Kenny, what is a game? What is a game that would make you go get the PSVR 2.
Oh, man. I can think of some that were on the Quest that, if it weren't on the Quest, something like it, something like a Half-Life Alyx, or even the Resident Evil 4 VR remake was amazing. But, you know, I think the killer app should be a new IP. That would make me the most excited, honestly. Like a full game, like a full bottom to top, full whatever hour game. You know, some people don't want to be in VR that long, but that kind of pushes the boundaries of what's going on in VR right now. And it looks like every like a bunch of other AAA games that are out there, but something brand new that gets me excited. It might be coming. I don't know. But, you know, the beginning of PSVR 2, like if I'm going to recommend VR to somebody that I know, and like I was just telling Donnie, look at this library, like a lot of this stuff is on Quest. A lot of friends I know are on Quest, and it's a social space where they're all already there, and it's cheaper, and there's no wire coming out the back of it.
Yeah. Next up from Games Radar, for the second time, Monster Energy starts beef with a game developer over its name. Monster Energy is involved in yet another trademark dispute with a game developer. The energy drink company is going after indie developer Glowstick Entertainment for using the word monster in the title of its game Dark Deception, Monsters and Mortals. The non-negotiable terms given to the developer by Monster Energy state that for the developer to continue using the game's current title, any of Glowstick's future games cannot contain the word monster or variations such as monstrous or monstrosity. The words beast and unleash are also off the table. Glowstick founder and CEO Vincent Livings has said he's prepared to fight back against the energy drink company. In a tweet, he wrote, "It's well known that Monster Energy is a notorious trademark troll. For a company that likes to target their drinks at gamers, they also like to try to bully and bankrupt game studios with lengthy high-dollar litigation. This isn't the first trademark dispute Monster Energy has had with a game. As you may recall, Ubisoft's open-world RPG Immortals Fenyx Rising used to be called Gods and Monsters, which Monster Energy thought would also confuse people because, you know, clearly they're the same. Obviously, plenty of games have the word monster in their titles, including, of course, Capcom's mega-popular Monster Hunter series, so why the company's taken issue with these two games in particular is rather puzzling. Outside of trademark disputes, Monster Energy is well known to many players as the sponsor of various esports events. Its drinks even appeared in virtual form in one of 2019's biggest releases, Death Stranding." Exactly. This whole article is that sound a million times over.
Right.
I couldn't believe this when I read it. Yeah, it's. I just heard about this today, and it's like, man, I was taken aback by this. It's almost like if Dr. Pepper went after, you know, Dr. Mario or other video game medical professionals.
Right, or anybody who dared to use the term Pepper.
Exactly.
It's that stupid. Monster is a term all its own. It has its own meaning separate from a really shitty energy drink. That's ridiculous for them to think that they own that.
But they're friends with Hideo Kojima, apparently.
Oh, God.
Well, if you look at what they're saying about Capcom, Capcom had a game.
Monster Hunter.
Yeah, Monster. So Monster Hunter. Well, this game came out called Monster Hunter. There should be no problem. Because it's got monster in the title. Yeah, there's no big deal. I mean, I'm sorry, but whenever I think of the word monster, it doesn't automatically make me think of the energy drink company.
No, it's a word that has been in the dictionary for God knows how long. Right. And it's like, and it's not like, I'm sure there's companies that have words that they kind of made up themselves or they spell a specific way. But I can't think of any example that's comparable to this where they just take claim to a word that's been around forever.
Right. I want to see them go after Disney and tell them to stop using like the Monster Inc. IP or saying nobody's allowed to call it a monster truck anymore.
Monster truck. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be a headline. Monster Energy goes after monster trucks.
Yep. No more monster trucks. You can only call them big, giant, mean trucks. I don't know. Whatever.
Even though they sponsor a lot of the monster truck rallies.
Right. So then what the hell?
But what happens when another company has a very generic definition in their title, right? Like, so monster, the definition for monster is whatever. It's like, I don't even know. But
let's look it up.
Yeah. Okay.
Dictionary.com. Oh, look, it's a picture of an energy drink. No, just kidding. It is a non-human creature so ugly or monstrous as to frighten people, or a person who provokes or elicits horror by wickedness or cruelty. any animal or thing huge in size, and nowhere does it say anything about energy drinks.
Well, it pretty much describes this company to a T. But fair. Anyway, what happens when somebody uses the word artist, right? So the term artist means something, but then a company says, oh, well, we're gonna be the Artist Inc. or Artist Company. And now if somebody comes up and tries to use a game that says artist something, and they're like, no, you can't do that because we trademarked this. We trademark a generic term, and now you can't use that.
Yes, exactly. You shouldn't be allowed to trademark generic terms and then go after tiny companies for using a generic term. That shouldn't be allowed legally.
No, it should not. Monster Energy, you are a bag.
Yeah, you suck. And I don't know what this game is about, but I kind of want to buy it now.
It's probably going to be the best game of the year.
I'm talking about Death Stranding, right? Yeah, Death Stranding.
No, not Death Stranding.
All right, next up from Hollywood Reporter, Street Fighter film TV rights go to Legendary. Legendary, the company behind Detective Pikachu and the Warcraft movie, is ready to unleash a sonic boom with the studio acquiring the film and TV rights to the classic beat-em-up game Street Fighter. The studio will work with video game company Capcom on future projects. Street Fighter is one of the more enduring fighting video game franchises of all time. It began life in the 1987 arcade game Street Fighter and hit a high watermark with Street Fighter II, the 1991 game that spawned countless special editions and remakes. In all, the franchise has sold 49 million units worldwide, with a new installment, Street Fighter VI, due out June 2nd. Hollywood has made moves on Street Fighter in the past, with Universal releasing an ill-fated 1994 film that starred Jean-Claude Van Damme as Colonel Guile and featured a cast including Kylie Minogue, Ming-Na Wen, and the late Raul Julia. More than a decade later, 20th Century Fox released Street Fighter: The Legend of Chun-Li, which starred Kristen Crook in the title role. Like its predecessor, it was a commercial and critical bomb. An assortment of animated adaptations have also made their way to the screen. Legendary, which has a film distribution deal with Sony, has Dune Part 2 due out November 3rd. Its deal for Street Fighter comes as video game adaptations have found success in recent years, with Paramount's Sonic films, Sony's Uncharted, and HBO's The Last of Us all cutting through to varying degrees. And on Friday, Universal will try its luck with the Super Mario Bros. Movie, the first time in 30 years that gaming giant Nintendo has teamed with a Hollywood studio to put one of its prized properties on the big screen. So, Donnie, what do you think? Street Fighter movie getting a mulligan?
It definitely needs a mulligan. The Mortal Kombat movie that came out a couple of years ago, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. I think that Street Fighter its time in the sun is due. You know, we haven't had anything to do with Street Fighter for a long time. I'm not even talking about The Legend of Chun-Li because that movie sucked.
Need to talk about that.
No, we don't. So technically, we haven't seen a Street Fighter movie since 1994. And that one was even bad. But like back when we were teenagers and, you know, these kind of movies came out, you're just like, oh, yeah, it's great. It's a video game. It's a movie about a video game that I love. And we could kind of look past how horrible it was just because we got to see some of our favorite characters on the screen. Even a little bit with the Mario Brothers movie. I mean,
I was going to say, me and Ryan from our podcast over here kind of get by. The only thing we agree on is that we kind of both like the original Mario movie. Just because when we were kids, I think we just liked it so much. Just exactly what you were saying, that it was, right. The Mario in it, you know.
It spoke to you, even though it was horribly.
Exactly. I can recognize that it's ridiculous, but it's fun.
But yes, I think I'm very excited to see what can be done with Street Fighter. The stories are endless, really. The possibilities are endless on what they're going to do. I mean, are they going to have the classic everybody versus M. Bison, Akuma, and all that stuff? Maybe. But until we actually see a trailer, then I'm going to hold out hope.
That's the way I am with every video game adaptation right now. And then when something's good, I'm pleasantly surprised. So there you go.
Right. I go into all of these things being or expected to be disappointed. And if I am, that's par for the course. If I'm not, that's a great day.
Really? Are you guys going into the new Mario movie expecting to be disappointed?
When it comes to video game movies, kind of. But this one, because it's animation, I'm not.
Yeah, the Mario movie looks fun, and I'm not expecting it to be a great thought-provoking story or even an interesting story. I'm expecting a bunch of cool Easter eggs and fun nostalgic things, which at the end of the day, am I going to say this is a great film? I don't know, but it'll be a fun one to watch at least.
All right, fair enough.
What about you, Blue? I know I've talked to you about the Mario Brothers movie and how you're not excited for it. Does the sound of a Street Fighter movie make you excited?
I am mainly curious to see where they would go with it, because the 1994 Street Fighter movie was kind of humorous, kind of campy. Like, it seemed kind of self-aware, and for all its faults, I think it knew what it was. I think it knew that it was a silly video game movie, and it didn't try to take itself too seriously. And that is, I think, one of the biggest things that was wrong with The Legend of Chun-Li. Was it was dead serious about what it was doing, and it was so bad. So I'd be interested to see what this new one tries to do. Like, is it going to go like the most recent Mortal Kombat movie, where it's taking itself very seriously? It's got a lot of slick action and special effects, or is it going to kind of go more lighthearted and throw some humor in there? I don't know. I feel like that's the direction I would go with it if I was going to try to write this script, but it's a tough one.
I think it would be more likely to succeed if it was like that, kind of slapsticky and fun, and maybe throw a John Cena in there or something like that. I don't know, but I think it's possible to do a serious one well, but I like you were just saying, I think if you're betting on it, the slapsticky way would probably be the way to go.
Like slapsticky, where you have the car destruction level or the barrels level, uh-huh. That you like something involving that.
Right.
Like, why are these barrels? Why don't these barrels just stop? And you're like, he's sitting there like crushing every single one of them. And yeah, I think that would be kind of funny.
Yeah. The only thing is, you would have to nail it. Like, if you went campy, you would have to absolutely nail it, because otherwise everybody would just say, oh, they're repeating the same mistakes as the other Street Fighter movie.
Would you recommend going full campy or just like splashes of camp?
Splashes. I think you still need some of the slick action. You need some good choreography and some killer fight scenes. But yeah, I just don't think it should be too serious. These are still video games at the end of the day. I don't know how serious any of them should really take themselves.
I agree. Except for like maybe something like Final Fight. If you turn that into a movie, maybe that's not campy. Maybe that's a serious one. I don't know.
I don't know.
The discussion for another time.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
Well, they keep pulling out video game adaptations left and right like they are. I suppose it's only a matter of time till they get to it.
Yeah, when you're scraping the bottom of the barrel eventually, right? Because you're coming out one after the other. I mean, we're going to be getting to Final Fight soon enough and casting, you know, we'll be doing our own casting on the podcast.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty soon there will be a Legacy of the Wizard video game adaptation. Who knows?
Milan's Secret Castle adaptation. Yeah.
It's coming, don't worry.
From Games Radar, new Mario game cruelly teased for future Nintendo Directs. Nintendo has a particularly cruel, vague tease for fans eagerly awaiting the next mainline Mario game. Just watch future Nintendo Directs. Mario creator Shigeru Miyamoto was interviewed by Variety ahead of the release of the Super Mario Bros. Movie. To close the interview, Variety asked, "Now that we have the new Mario in Super Nintendo World Amusement Park, when can we expect a new Mario game?" With a big old smile, Miyamoto responded, "Well, all I can say is please stay tuned for future Nintendo Directs." Jokes aside, it is legitimately very unusual for Nintendo to even half seriously acknowledge in-development products, especially when it comes to something as big as a mainline Mario game. There have been rumors of a new 2D entry since last year, and fans are growing desperate. It's been nearly 6 years since the release of Super Mario Odyssey, and even innocuous marketing emails have been enough to raise expectations to unreasonable levels. When will that new game actually hit? For now, the only reasonable thing we can actually say is someday.
Someday, when my life has passed me by.
Yeah, I was reading this. I was kind of wondering, do you think they're going to do a follow-up to Odyssey like they did with Breath of the Wild, or they just do a sharp turn and do something completely different with Mario? I always think that every 3D Mario that comes out is like better than the last usually. And it's like Odyssey almost seems like a peak, like you're transforming into a million different things. I mean, maybe another 3D Mario would be a whole new gimmick, like they had the hat for Odyssey, but mm-hmm. Making it bigger, more expansive. And knowing Nintendo, it's going to be something no one's going to predict. but I'm really interested to see what it could possibly be. I think if it was an Odyssey follow-up, you'd think we would have heard of something about it by now, but I don't know.
Right.
Well, it would make sense. I mean, they did two galaxies, so it would make sense for them to do two Odysseys, especially considering how successful it was. It does seem like the kind of thing that would be a launch title for whatever comes out after the Switch. So maybe they're saving that announcement for when they announce whatever is you know, Switch 2 or whatever it's going to be. But
that is a good point.
So you don't think we'll see a new Mario Brothers game on the Switch?
Not necessarily, but I know they're going to need a killer launch title. And we're getting Breath of the Wild 2 on this Switch. So
true.
It might be Mario Kart 9, but I feel like as the launch title for the Switch 2 is what I'm going to call it. But launching with a Mario game would make complete sense. And launching with something like Odyssey 2 would also make complete sense.
I actually like that prediction that, you know, Switch follow-up is new 3D Mario. Maybe in the meantime, a 2D Mario.
I'm all for 2D Mario. I actually prefer 2D absolutely. Mario to 3D. 3D kind of stresses me out.
What if they came out with something like Super Mario World 3?
Ooh.
That would be a pop. That'd be amazing. Yeah, people would lose their minds at that one.
Yeah. Day one buy for me. I'd be waiting up.
Hell yeah.
I mean, do people still wait in line outside stores for game releases?
I mean, sure, I guess you can. It's your prerogative if you want to do that.
I did that for Red Dead 2, and that wasn't that long ago, but it was still, you know, 2019, I think, so.
Let's kick everything old school. Let's do it.
Yeah. Even if we're the only ones out there, we'll just all get together, like a tent, some hot chocolate, and just wait it out.
We've got our Game Boys with our Game Boy lights.
Yes.
If we're doing World 3, it's got to be a mix of like Super Mario World, you're playing as Mario, and then other stages, you're playing Yoshi with Baby Mario.
Kind of No. Why, Kenny? Why?
Are you World 2 haters?
I hate yes. that game.
Oh, my heavens. I absolutely love that game. I mean, I like World better, you know, admittedly, but I think I didn't play Super Mario World 2 until I was in my mid-20s, and it still held up, like, totally. I absolutely loved it.
I think it's an excellent quality game, like what Nintendo puts out. But my main problem with it is they try to shove in too many new strange mechanics into one game. So it's not only that you're having to take care of Baby Mario, you're having to shoot eggs instead of jump on stuff, and then you got to find keys and pick one of those things. Pick one of those
things. It's understandable, and it's probably why I did not play it back in the day when it came out when I was a kid, and why I waited so long to do it. Just I was probably feeling those exact same things back then, and like, what the hell is this? Why isn't this Super Mario World my favorite game? And but you know, then I played it later, and now I am a convert.
Fair enough.
And now let's take a look at our top three new releases. Creed, Rise to Glory, Championship Edition. PSVR 2, hey, look at that. Immerse yourself in the pulse-pounding excitement of boxing with the cinematic thrill of a blockbuster movie as you step into the ring as an aspiring boxing champion. Train under Rocky Balboa, fight familiar and unexpected contenders across dynamic arenas, and establish your boxing legacy. Championship Edition brings an enhanced and expanded experience for new and seasoned Creed players alike with additional game content, features, quality of life upgrades, and PvP cross-platform support. Meet your maker, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. You are the custodian of the Chimera, a living experiment created as a last resort to save life on Earth. Enter a tactical battle for the planet's most coveted resource and the key to your Chimera's evolution. Pure genetic material. Gross. Meet Your Maker is a post-apocalyptic first-person building and raiding game where every level is designed by players. Construct and fortify brutal outposts to extract and guard your gen mat. Infiltrate and outsmart other players' outposts to gather more. Adapt, upgrade, and evolve, or die trying. Curse of the Sea Rats. PS5, Xbox Series XS, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC. Curse of the Sea Rats is a Toidvania platform adventure with lovingly crafted hand-drawn animations. Embark on the epic journey of four prisoners of the British Empire transformed into rats by the notorious pirate witch Flora Byrne. To regain their human bodies, they will have to fight dangerous bosses, uncover the secrets of the vast Irish coast, and ultimately capture the witch who cursed them. Explore a rich, non-linear world, enjoy fun action platforming, face challenging bosses, and unlock unique abilities, either alone or in local co-op. So based on these three choices this week, Kenny, which one are you choosing?
Absolutely, Meet Your Maker, because it's the only one of these three that I've looked in depth at, and it looks pretty interesting. It looks like a fun game to play with friends, and you build traps all around this world to kind of have them infiltrate your base, and you try to keep them out with all these. It almost looks like a Doom style game mixed with a Mario Maker or something, because you're building the levels and fortifications and all this stuff. It looks like a pretty unique game, and I will probably play it.
Oh, nice. Blue, what about you?
Well, I don't have a PSVR 2, and you know how much I love first-person shooters, so that probably steers me over to Curse of the Sea Rats. Hand-drawn animation sounds nice. Ratroidvania is an interesting term.
Right.
So maybe I would like it.
You know, it's visually pleasing. Like, think Cuphead with Streets of Rage, almost.
Okay. Well, I mean, those are both great games.
Yeah.
Okay, my pick of the week then, Curse of the Sea Rats.
There you go.
What about you, Donnie?
So I did take a look at some of the gameplay for Creed Rise to Glory, and this game would probably have me wheezing and coughing and out of breath and everything like that trying to play it. I like boxing. I like boxing games, so I would like to definitely check this one out. Meet Your Maker, I am no good at building things, like doing things like in Minecraft or Mario Maker, where I'm not good at those things. So I tend to steer clear from them. However, I do like playing levels that other people have designed or trying to beat levels that other people have designed. So couple this with the first person shooter aspect, I could possibly check this game out, although I'm not as hyped on it as Kenny is. Curse of the Sea Rats. It looks different. I don't know what a Ratoidvania means. I have no idea. It's a platformer. Kind of looks a little bit too cute for me. So I think my choice this week might be Creed Rise to Glory.
Yeah, we all have different ones.
That doesn't happen very often, honestly. All right, let's move on to our main topic. From Nintendo Life, Soapbox, nobody does more of the same better than Nintendo. We've known pretty much since the first trailer that The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom is going to be more Breath of the Wild. It wasn't said outright, but the similar visual style coupled with its very early name, the sequel to The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, established that Nintendo knew it captured the magic with the Switch launch title, and it wasn't going to let go anytime soon. And with every trailer since, we've been presented with what looks like just that, more Breath of the Wild. Combat looks the same, exploration looks largely the same, and yes, weapons still break. But amidst all of that, I could strap a mushroom to my shield and use it to create a cloud of spores and surprise my enemy. Sequels don't need to reinvent the wheel. They never have. And most people, in terms of Tears of the Kingdom at least, agree with that. Yet there's a section of the fan base who isn't happy that Tears of the Kingdom is more of the same. Claims that it should be DLC to Breath of the Wild, or disappointment that a game that's taken 6 years, massively disruptive pandemic notwithstanding, of course, to develop reused assets, though few and far between, are easy to find. And it had me thinking about iterative sequels. Why does an iterative sequel feel like a bad thing to some people?
By their very nature, video game sequels are meant to take what made the previous game great and improve on it, ironing out the kinks while keeping the series' identity. Games arguably do this better than any other medium due to the constantly evolving knowledge pool and toolset of a relatively young industry. Nintendo has a reputation for innovation, particularly in the terms of its consoles, but when I think about some of my favorite Nintendo games, it strikes me that the Big N is also a master of iteration. Even back in the very early days, the Big N was trying new things while also developing familiar sequels. Super Mario Bros. And Super Mario Bros. 2, the Lost Levels, are pretty much identical. The latter has different levels and is much, much harder. On the flip side, The Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2, The Adventures of Link, are pretty darn different. A top-down adventure to a side-scrolling RPG is a pretty sharp left turn. Both of these sequels are controversial in their own ways, but they're both indicative of Nintendo as a developer. The Donkey Kong Country series was entirely developed for and released on SNES, and each of these added new mechanics and new levels, but the core games were very similar to one another. You can say the same about Rare's Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie, two masterful 3D collectathon platformers. Kazooie laid the foundations, and Tooie just goes for the bigger and more mode.
With bigger teams to manage, more powerful hardware to develop for, and higher expectations to meet, video games are bloody expensive. Not only to produce, but to buy. Super Mario Odyssey gave Mario a new gimmick in Cappy, tons of incredible worlds, more collectability than ever before, and a huge facelift for his debut on Switch. And if people wanted a new 3D Mario on Switch, besides the excellent Bowser's Fury stopgap, Mario Odyssey 2 is likely what it would be. Of course, Nintendo would use some of the assets and build on what made Odyssey great, right? We'll likely be waiting until the next console for more 3D Mario, Odyssey 2 or not, and it'll be something a bit different, though not wildly different. A brand new 3D Zelda game is an incredibly exciting prospect, but when you're following it up and on the same console, where do you go? Breath of the Wild is the best-selling Zelda game of all time, and it's not even close. Breath of the Wild captured something magical, so of course Nintendo wants to build upon that. Not every single Zelda game going forward will be another Breath of the Wild, but from what we've seen so far, it looks like Tears of the Kingdom is that to a degree. Iteration is hugely important in video games, no matter if it's using the same formulas or taking big parts of previous games and just tweaking up the mechanics. The space for innovation isn't going anywhere, and very soon we'll be returning to a familiar kingdom with new tools that offer a fresh, thrilling perspective on places we thought we knew. What could be more Zelda than that?
So we were kind of just talking about this with Yoshi's Island.
Yes.
Where some of us feel that it was too big of a departure from the original Super Mario World. But then on the other hand, Donnie, you've complained before that Tears of the Kingdom just looks like more Breath of the Wild, and so it shouldn't be its own game.
You are correct. There are... this is a difficult argument, right? Because yes, we love games like Super Mario World and we want more of that. But does that constitute a brand new game paying a brand new separate price of launch title prices like $79 or $69 when it's like, oh, well, it's just basically a DLC. But you take something like Super Mario World versus Super Mario World 2, where they completely changed it up and did something different, kind of like Legend of Zelda, the original Legend of Zelda and Legend of Zelda 2, Adventures of Link, completely different games.
I think in looking at the Tears of the Kingdom new demo, or not demo, you know, gameplay footage that came out recently, I was kind of the same opinion as you, Donnie, that it looked a little bit like DLC, more of the same map. There's stuff in the sky, sure. But after seeing the new abilities and things, I start to think like all this time spent that, you know, they could have been making a brand new game. They put all that time into kind of honing these new mechanics, which seem very extensive at this point. When I think about the possibilities of like taking things in the world and making them run backwards in time, or the system of fusing things together, sure, it's, you know, it's an iteration on Breath of the Wild, but I think it's going to be a lot more exciting and interesting than I even initially thought it was going to be, with this new stuff to play with and the physics, and it just seems very, very extensive, and I just can't wait to see more of it, honestly.
Yeah, I am a big fan of Breath of the Wild. Spent over 100 hours in that game. Didn't get, you know, full completion by any means, but I spent so much time exploring that map. And so even if Tears of the Kingdom really does drop you down in the exact same map, I'm totally fine with it because there was so much to do and so much left that I didn't find. But Nintendo's not going to do that. Even if it has the same basic structure, they're going to change things. Like, I don't know where they're going with the story, like if time has passed between the first game and this game, but they are going to change it. There's going to be new stuff. It's not going to be just exactly the same thing. We've played enough Nintendo games that at this point, I have faith that Nintendo is going to make this a really great experience, even if on the surface it looks exactly the same. But, you know, I'm agreeing with the author in that I think the iterative stuff, that's okay. And even the people I think who are complaining about this, they accept it in other games. Let's talk Mario Kart. It's always the same basic gameplay. Let's talk Assassin's Creed, always the same basic gameplay. Let's talk Call of Duty, always the same basic gameplay. People like iterative stuff, but then it's like every once in a while they decide that it's not okay in this specific area. But I mean, that's what IPs and series are built on, is iterative stuff.
And there's really nothing wrong when you look at Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. If they put you, like you were just saying, Blue, if they put you right down in the exact same spot, in the exact same map, I think I would be okay with it as long as they did, as long as they made changes to it, like show you time has passed. One little area that you used to go in that was like maybe a water level has dried up and it's kind of overgrown or something like that. And now this little particular area, which was nice and flat, is now rocky because volcano happened and it destroyed some of it. So change it up a little bit, kind of like the dark world for Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, right? It was basically the same world, just, you know, different things happened to it. And it made it very interesting and dynamic. So if they kind of did that same thing with Tears of the Kingdom, I'd be okay with it.
You know, the time spent, you know, theoretically working on a full new game to make a full new map, they instead took that time to kind of hone in on these new mechanics. Yeah, and I think that's going to show in like a, you think about the amount of work that's put in on making these systems that they just showed us a little bit of, and maybe my imagination is running wild a bit, but if you look at Breath of the Wild and the things you could do in that game, I don't think it is really. And think about the possibilities with the, all those new mechanics and systems. I think these people will see that are complaining where all that time went, and I don't think there'll be much complaining going on after the game comes out. I'm predicting that. I could be wrong, but we'll see.
Complainer's going to complain. I think that's one thing you can always count on.
So aside from the pandemic, a game that's taken 6 years to develop, is that cause for an uproar if they do put you back into the same exact map and nothing has changed as far as the landscape?
Not to me. I'm excited because the brand new mechanics make it seem like they have taken the sandbox elements that were in the first game and kind of dialed them up to 11. So I want to see, and I'm sure there are many people out there like me, I want to see what I can do that's not allowed. Like, let's see if I can break the game and just build some horrible monstrosity that the developers never intended. So I'm excited to do stuff like that.
That's exactly what it seems like. They recognize that a lot of people in Breath of the Wild were heavily drawn to those sort of things, mechanics in the game where there's experimentation and people wanting to break the game and try different things out. And does this work? And does this work if I can do this? And it seems like, especially for the intro to it and watching the gameplay, that they're leaning way into that. And the 6 years that it's taken, they've probably spent a lot of time on making that stuff super cool. So I'm super excited to play this game.
Yeah. But I mean, even if they didn't, I really dislike the mentality of people demanding games that come out faster and faster and faster. There's certain series that can do that. Call of Duty can do that. Assassin's Creed can do that. But both of those are now kind of getting to the point where they're not able to keep up with the yearly releases anymore. And I think that games should take their time, you know, to a point. We don't want everyone to be Cyberpunk 2077. We don't want everyone to be Starfield or Final Fantasy 15. But I think games should be able to take their time. Developers should be able to take their time. And I really disagree with this kind of entitlement mentality that says that game development should only take a certain amount of time and it shouldn't look the same and it do exactly what I want. Never mind how much work it takes or how hard it is.
Right. The give me what I want. It's the on-demand mentality that we are now of the environment that we are living in today. My shows are on demand. My food is on demand. My game should be on demand as well as whenever I want them.
Right.
I was trying to think of the last Zelda that had like an iteration game, but I guess are there any? I guess there are kind of spinoffs like Link Between Worlds and things like that. But has that ever happened before?
Well, that was kind of my argument in favor of like people who said Breath of the Wild isn't a Zelda game. It was an open world. It had the breakable weapons, whatever. And that was my argument was, well, Zelda, of all series that are out there, Zelda is one that has continually reinvented itself.
Except for when you talk about Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. That was an iteration.
There you go. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I knew there was one. I was like, why can't I think of this?
Fair. But I mean, other than those two, Zelda's a series that has constantly reinvented itself. So people complained when it reinvented itself to Breath of the Wild, and now they're complaining that it's not reinventing itself enough.
I think that argument is invalid because this is only the second time that the Zelda series has been an iteration.
Yeah. So complainer's going to complain, like we said.
No matter what it is.
Yeah, I think the game will speak for itself and we will see. And I am very optimistic.
Same. Day one buy for me.
It'll win Game of the Year award, no question.
No way. Starfield will.
That's bold.
It's not coming out.
I heard that before. Wow.
That's my prediction for the year. It has to.
You know, I actually hope that you're right. I honestly do. That would be super cool if that game is that good. I really want it to be.
Yeah, fingers crossed because I got a streak to maintain. So...
Even when she loses, she still wins.
I'm glad you finally realized that.
All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game show games, and more. Here is this week's trivia question. The handheld Genesis Nomad was inspired by the combination of several previous Sega consoles. The first, of course, was the Sega Genesis, since the Nomad could play Sega Genesis games. The second was the Game Gear, Sega's previous handheld system. Lastly, it was inspired by what exclusively Japanese portable console that was developed for use on airline flights? Tune into the Elitist Podcast this Wednesday to hear the answer. You can find the Elitist on your favorite podcast platform, and we'll also have their links in the show notes, as well as having them as a guest on the show.
Indeed. So, Kenny, this is what your guys' trivia question. Do you know the answer?
I was about to say, if you guys don't know this, I will also be waiting for the Elitist Podcast to find out the answer, because I have no idea. Tim comes up with these questions, and he pulls kind of deeper than the knowledge I have sometimes, for sure. But no, I think I've heard of this before, and I think the name has something to do with flying in it, but I can't remember what it is.
I do have the answer. Tim sent it to me. Oh. So, do you have a guess, Donnie?
Okay, so the combination of several previous... Okay, well, maybe it was... I don't know. No clue.
Come on, somebody make a guess.
Redacted.
You're not too far off, honestly.
The Sega Mile High Club?
That's a different handheld. The answer is the
redacted.
Oh my God, I got a word right.
You did. Congratulations.
The hell is
redacted?
The exclusively Japanese portable.
It's a Sega handheld developed for airlines in Japan.
You asked. We're just helping.
Another handheld version of the Mega Drive. It was rented. Oh, no shit. Okay. I never even heard of it.
I randomly glanced by that information at some point in the last 2 years, like researching stuff for the Elitist Podcast, and it totally left my brain, but I knew it had something to do with flying.
I'm impressed you remembered that much.
Yeah, me too. Everyone, come check me out on the Elitist Podcast. I'm Kenny. I'm joined by a friend, Tim, and another friend, Ryan, and we play trivia games about video games. We do all sorts of trivia, game shows. We come up with games every week and play them with each other, test our trivia knowledge on video games, and learn things all the time. Check out the Elitist on your preferred podcast platform or theelitist.com for everything else. I have a short little thing for you guys to play. On the last episode of The Elitist, I debuted a new game that I came up with. It's a pretty simple one. It's called Wikiliteration. And I basically pulled some words from a video game's wiki page, words that all start with the same letter. And I'm just going to give you a list of words that appear in this video game's wiki page. And you're going to guess what the video game is.
Ooh. Oh, my okay. gosh.
I like it. I like it.
Yeah. I have a couple of these. I'll see how many we can go through. I got three or four. So here we go. First game. These are all words that start with M, as in mother. Here are your words. Midway, mounted, members, military, mistress.
Midway.
One more time.
Midway, mounted, members, military, mistress.
I'm going to go with Revolution X.
Is that your final answer?
That is, are Blue and I supposed to collaborate and listen?
Oh, yeah. This is totally co-op if you guys want to talk.
I don't have a better guess. Donnie sounded...
Revolution X.
Yeah, I'm fairly confident. So.
Absolutely correct. Yes. The word mistress comes from head mistress Helga, played by who?
Kerry Hoskins.
There you go. All right. Next letter I have for you is I. Intelligent. Insect, icon, instruments.
Earthworm Jim?
That's an E. Well, never mind.
The game has to start with an I, too?
No. The game does not start with an I. Okay. Just the words do. Yeah.
Intelligent, insect.
Icon, instruments.
Instruments. Something that plays instruments, insects. Intelligent.
I can feel you getting there.
Giggity? Something that an insect that plays an instrument.
Or a game that features instruments and an insect.
That's okay. That's true. You said Earthworm Jim. I'm not sure if that's the correct one, but we can go with that one.
The answer is Mario Paint. There's an insect on the fly spotting game. There's instruments. There's icons. And developed by Nintendo and Intelligent Systems, apparently.
Never would have guessed that one.
One last one.
No.
1 point for you so far. We'll see if you can get the last one. This is a more obscure one. This is hard mode. This is a retro game. Here we go. Genesis, Ghost, Green, Grotesque, Glowing.
Genesis, Green, Glowing, Grotesque. It's either Haunted or Ghostbusters for the Genesis.
I got friggin' nothing. My knowledge of the Genesis library is tiny.
I mean, Green, obviously Slimer, maybe. Can you repeat the terms again?
Genesis, Ghost, Green, Grotesque, Glowing.
Now, he said it was obscure.
Obscure.
So Green and Ghost, that's too easy to be Ghostbusters. That's got to be something else.
The other thing I had, or the other suggestion I had, was Haunting, or the Haunted, or whatever it was for the Genesis.
Haunting starring Poltergeist is correct, Ronnie. There you go.
Good thing I steered you in the right direction.
Exactly. Ghostbusters, a little too obvious. Yeah, I played that game when I was a kid, and you're a little Poltergeist ghost who jumps into paintings in a mansion and tries to scare the family out.
Right.
And I bring up that game a lot to friends, and they have no idea what I'm talking about. I figured you guys might.
I actually picked that game up last year when I was in Gulf Shores, Alabama on vacation. There was this little retro shop I went to, Action Game and Movies, where a couple years ago, I'd also picked up another game. But yeah, it's a fun little game.
Nicely done. With two correct questions, you have won this game. Woo-hoo! Wiki Literations. Woo!
What do we win?
Guest spot on the Leetest Podcast.
So if you like that little taste of trivia that we had just now, definitely check out the Leetest, and there's so, so much more.
And if you want to be a winner like Donnie G, check out the Leetest Podcast.
Or listen to Blue when she tells you don't go with the obvious answer.
Good advice. Good advice.
Yep. I'm glad you were there to guide me.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. Thank you for listening to episode 67 of Gamers Week Podcast. And a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, the Leetest Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. While you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. Kenny, thank you so much for being a guest this evening on Gamers Week Podcast and also bringing your trivia game to our patrons. It was definitely fun. I am a big fan of trivia, and I love what you guys do over there.
I am delighted to have been invited on. I had a great time, and I'm really glad you won my game.
Yes, thanks, Kenny. And definitely looking forward to the next time we all get together on your show.
As am I.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.